Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Welcome, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the creator, producer, and co-host of the show. And also in the virtual studio today is my colleague and co-host, Dr. Phil Marshall, co-founder and chief product officer of Conversa Health, an innovative patient engagement and digital health checkup company. Good morning, Phil.
Well, hello, Greg. It looks like we have some voices in the background. It's not just me hearing voices, is it?
I don't hear anything. Sounds good to me. And we'll just proceed. This Week in Health Innovation is brought to you by Health Innovation Media, where we monitor the innovation impulse from idea to business model. Today, we resume our continuing focus on innovation in the emerging digital health economy with Jan Oldenburg, a nationally recognized thought leader on patient engagement, with extensive experience working with accountable care organizations to create and implement patient-centered care and patient engagement programs. Jan is a senior manager at Ernst & Young's advisory healthcare practice and was previously a vice president of physician and patient engagement at Aetna Accountable Care Solutions and a senior manager of the Digital Health Services Group at the Trophy Integrated Delivery System Kaiser Permanente. Jan is a past president of the Northern California HIMSS Board, a HIMSS Fellow, and a vice chair of the National HIMSS Connected Patient Committee. She served as the primary editor of Engage, Transforming Healthcare Through Digital Patient Engagement, a book we'll touch on today, published by HIMSS Press. Jan frequently speaks and writes about patient and physician engagement, is a graduate of Luther College, and is based in Boise, Idaho. So with that, by way of an official introduction, Phil, help us get to know your colleague, Jan.
Oh, well, it would be my pleasure. Jan, welcome to the program today.
Thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be here.
Well, you've certainly accomplished a great deal in the area of patient engagement. I knew you first from Kaiser Permanente, and then as you moved on to Aetna and some of your other work, you've just continued to be a trailblazer on understanding patients and their attitudes, physicians, and how they can engage patients. One of the things that I know that you're passionate about and that you think a lot about is how the different parts of the healthcare system work together to help support patients, empower them, and help them to become equal partners in their care. There are so many pressures on physicians today, and I know it's something that you've studied very carefully, and I was wondering if you could just give us a little bit of perspective on where physicians are with regard to the pressures they have, what meaningful use and patient engagement and meaningful use is doing for them, or they might feel doing to them, and how can physicians potentially open up, reduce a little bit of that stress, potentially bring patients up to a level of partners to help reduce some of that stress that they're feeling?
Big question. But let me start by talking about some of the approaches. And I think it's more than just physicians. I think it is the whole care team. I am fond of thinking about patient engagement as a team sport, where if it's going to work effectively, we really need to make sure that everybody, honestly, in the system, from the person who greets you at the door to the registration clerk to the nurse who rooms you to your doctor to the phlebotomist, that where everybody is thinking about how they can work with you, how they can engage you, and everybody views it as part of their job to not only make you welcome, but to help you understand more about your health and how you can get engaged. So when we think about what physicians are going through and what the whole system of care providers is going through, they are feeling pretty overwhelmed by all of the different mandates, so many things to do, and so many shifts in the way that they need to practice, including, honestly, relinquishing some control and being willing to open up to patients not just as a kind of people to accept passively the knowledge they have, but really to be partners in their care. And I think what we're starting to see, doctors are in many different places, and some of it has to do with how far along in their digital experience they are. But I think we're starting to see that they are beginning to recognize that some of the new tools, both in their work in the EMR, but also in exposing patients to their data, to customized education based on their data, to the ability to take some actions in relation to their own health, that that's actually freeing them up a bit for more important aspects of care. And I would say perhaps the same thing in some of the new models of care like ACOs, the Medicare Shared Savings Program, the patient-centered medical home, that are helping them focus on what's the right care to deliver in the right framework in order to improve and sustain the health of populations, that all of that is starting to help them shift their focus and their emphasis and perhaps feel a little less overwhelmed by it all.
Well, that's a really interesting perspective and timely, because we have a lot of new ideas being introduced into the market, such as patient-generated health data and what patients can do to contribute their own voice so that physicians and the health system and the care team know how patients are doing between visit. But there is the trust factor, that relinquishing control that you mentioned. And so how should the care team think about opening that up, and what are the issues that they should think about when it comes to having patients contribute that information between visits in order to drive their care? That trust factor, that relinquishing control are so critical. What should they be thinking about?
So I think it is part of a broader culture change where people are not, in very many areas of their lives, not as likely to be passive consumers as perhaps they were in the past. I tend to think it starts with language, that the language we use to talk about the relationship between patients and providers, between patients and insurers, has an impact on how we deal with them. So in particular, let's look at the language around compliance and adherence. So we have tended in the healthcare system to think that that's the highest good, a patient who is adherent or compliant with the approach that we recommend for them. But if you think about that, that's kind of all of those words are very much related to following a leader, to being passive. And if we truly want people to be engaged in their care, we actually want them to take some responsibility. And I think it perhaps starts with the culture change of us thinking differently about the language we use, shifting from the language of adherence and compliance to the language of partnership and involvement. And that's both with the patients themselves, but also with their families. And perhaps more broadly, there's a community dimension to shifting these attitudes. We know people are generally as fat as their friends. So perhaps we need to think about engaging the community in programs and wellness a little differently. But I also think it's critical that we build on the trusted relationship that people have with their care team. And use is perhaps the wrong word, but work with that to open it up more broadly, to engage them and give them permission to ask us questions, to, in fact, look at their data, to explore their health issues, to securely message their providers with questions, that once we open the door with a changed attitude, I think we'll find that consumers are right there, ready to come in the door and partner with us.
Well, I'm wondering about this this issue of the patient's expectation and their own mindset. How should patients be brought up to being equal partners in their care? Because right now it seems to me that physicians feel that fingers are always pointing at them, that they should be the ones doing more, that they should be asking the patient more questions. They should be the ones doing, really, frankly, the way you read many things, that they should be doing all the work. But we know that it does have to be a partnership if it's going to work. Some of your own work and publications have shown that. So how do you help the patient to understand their role, their responsibility, and maybe even their obligation as part of that process?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think part of this is making sure that as we work through this shared future and this evolution, that we're really bringing in some of the principles of behavior change. I think it's true that nobody has the secret sauce yet about exactly what's the combination of things that help people to take responsibility for their health. Although, I think it's important to know that we are seeing results in small studies and small innovations. And some of the things that those results tell us is that this isn't a one-size-fits-all problem. People engage in different ways, and different things motivate them. And so if we're going to be effective, it's one of the places that I think we need to use data to empower physicians and the care team, as well as the patients, to figure out what are the motivating things for them and then what tools will help them engage in those ways. So it's partly a matter of thinking about, you know, what do we know and what can we bring into this picture in ways that support both the provider team and the patient. When you think about analytics, we tend to focus today on population health analytics, thinking about the whole group of individuals in a population and how they clump together in terms of risk factors and illness. And that's really important. But I am hopeful that we can use some of that personal health data, some of the ambient tracking tools, and use those to actually create a picture of personal health analytics that will be targeted, sort of mass customization, if you will, that will help Jan say, okay, Jan, you don't like programs that are coercive, but you really do enjoy competition. So here are two programs that we're going to recommend to you that we think will really work for you in increasing your exercise and reducing your exposure to asthma triggers. And if we can start getting to that level where it's not all about the individual physician, but the physician is supported by that data that we're able to gather from community resources, from patient-generated data, and from the things we know about the patient's life situation to support them appropriately, I think that's where some of the secret sauce is going to be, as well as in thinking about how care teams support doctors in their efforts. So it's not just about that key moment of the physician visit, but it's also about the surrounding activities that support the patient in the office, in the hospital, but also as they leave the direct control of the direct umbrella of the healthcare system.
It really speaks to one of the most important driving issues in healthcare right now, and that is quality measurement and performance-based reporting. Just to maybe sort of do a bit of a primer, if you will, for our audience who may not be as familiar, the quality measures that are used in healthcare, whether they be clinical quality measures that are process-oriented or outcome-oriented or even patient satisfaction, have become so central to payment in healthcare. You know, it's estimated by the major payers now that the majority of physician contracts by 2017 will have a performance-based component, and about, as I recall, about 15% of a given physician's payment by 2017 will be performance-based. And so this is increasing. It's becoming a big deal. But those measures are generally the measures that can only be documented or are only documented currently in the office or in the hospital. It's lab test results. It's compliance and adherence. And you said something earlier that really piqued my interest, and that is – shouldn't be thinking only in terms of compliance and adherence. Share with us some thoughts on what you're seeing with regard to the role of patient-generated data and patient participation to turn how we're currently thinking about quality measurement into measures that matter more for patients and how pay may change as a result of that data in addition to the clinical data that we're currently using.
Yes, I think it's both about patients taking responsibility for their own health by tracking things that are related to them, and us supporting them by giving them tools that work to do so and being open to the data that they generate in those ways. I also think, though, that this is about thinking differently about the value of data from different sources. We have tended to be systems that value the data that's collected by a doctor and not to trust patient-generated data. Even though, if you think about it, lots of the data in a person's health record actually is coming from their recounting of history. Just that it's filtered through a doctor's lens. So part of what we need to think about is how do we bring together both the patient's recording of his or her own experience with the insights from clinical data and the care system to be much more powerful. I think it's got a huge amount of promise that we could potentially be practicing medicine built much less on sporadic measures and much more on a continuous stream of data, but only if we find ways of visualizing the impact of the data, the trends, and highlighting what matters, both to the docs, honestly, and to the patients. I think I mentioned earlier that I'm an asthmatic, and when I first developed asthma in my mid-30s, I tracked my peak flows quite obsessively, three times a day. I charted them on Excel. I overlaid when I was on prednisone, and what I was trying to get to was the magic formula for when it was that I would sort of fall off the table in terms of my health versus when I would recover on my own. And I could never track enough data to do that, partly because I couldn't include ambient temperatures or the pollen count. But the other part was that I would come into urgent care or a physician's office with my data, because when I was sick, I was coughing too hard to be able to be articulate about what was going on. And I got two kinds of reactions. There were a couple of blessed few doctors who were like, oh, my God, data, this is awesome. let's figure out how we can help you using this. And much more commonly, the reaction was you could sort of see the eye roll, and the physician, if they had a thought bubble, it would be, oh, my God, we've got a head case. And I think that's the mentality that we have to change, both around, no, this is somebody who's already engaged in their health. Let's help them make sense of it. On B, we have to figure out how not to just have it be another source of inundation for physicians about, oh, my God, I've got this whole flow of data that I don't know what to do with. So before it's going to be truly useful for both sides, we've got to do much better about visualization tools that turn data into information and help us really track and understand what's important about it. Huge promise.
Well,
intermediate peril.
Huge promise and intermediate peril. Okay, well, that's a good phrase that just might get tweeted. And I wondered, though, you know, okay, so visualization is one thing. The ability to use it in the care setting is another, but using patient-generated data to actually base things like payment on is a whole separate level. And so will the performance measurement arena change and accommodate patient-generated data as a source of truth in the future?
I think it's going to have to, but I think in the middle we're going to have some muddling through. This has already come up in situations I've worked in terms of ACO situations where they're trying to figure out when they can close one of those measures and say it's completed. And what if the information about health status is coming from the patient? Is that a reliable way, an acceptable way, of closing one of the measures that they're going to be paid on? And honestly, we're going to have to work through some test cases before that becomes a widely accepted way of understanding measures. But another way to think about this, Phil, I think, is in situations like those when we are, we're trying to reduce readmissions across the system. That's one of the key measures in almost all of these payment mechanisms, and it certainly has an effect on both the patient's experience and the cost of care. But we are spending a lot of money trying to figure out external ways of getting in to figure out what is going on with a particular patient, rather than using some simple ways of asking patients or their caregivers how they're doing and really thinking about what kinds of responses should trigger responses from the system. And I think there are a couple of innovation companies that are working on that dimension. That, I think, is one of the areas that has great promise for both helping us think about getting better results and better outcomes while reducing costs at the same time. And it is about incorporating patient experience into the way we measure and think about what's going on outside of our four walls.
That's really a good thing to have us all think about and consider. I am wondering, we've only got a few minutes left here on the call, and you have been doing some really interesting work when it comes to health systems turning towards customer service, self-service, that patient relationship process to help offload a lot of this work. Tell us a little bit about what you're seeing there in what's working, what's not, in engaging patients in that self-service fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thanks. I think that is something I feel very passionate about. We are way behind as systems in turning to self-service. If you think about the way people live the rest of their lives, whether it's the way that they bank, the way that they arrange travel, even the way that they shop, you know, they are used to doing many more things themselves, both researching and actually conducting much of the transaction on their own. And one of the great things about it is that other industries have seen that not only reduce their costs by a factor of about 10 to 1, but increase satisfaction at the same time. And there are so few places that you can do both of those things, increase satisfaction while reducing costs. It's a huge area of promise. And I think the other factor about it is that convenience itself builds loyalty and trust. It says to a person, wow, this is a system or this is an entity that cares enough about me to worry about what's convenient for me, not what's convenient for them. And if we can harness that to really look at the processes and build in the lens of what is convenient for patients and caregivers, I think we're going to make huge progress, not just on the clinical side, but also on the health plan side. That speaks as well to the need to really re-engineer our payment processes and our billing processes. We've kind of taken what is one single process, split it into two parts that are disconnected. And we want people to be informed consumers about cost, but we haven't really given them the tools to do so because it's such a complex relationship. That's about self-service too.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good area that's gotten a lot of attention with Castlight and others. We've only got a couple of minutes left, and I'm wondering, Jan, if you had a $100 bill in front of you right now and you could place a bet on any technique, company, service, approach, anything in particular, what would it be?
Wow. I would put it on the link between tools to help patients really understand and manage their own health and the link to get that information into the healthcare system in ways that it's usable. So it's the bridge that takes all of the possible data that people could be generating and makes it usable both for them and for the health system. So I'm thinking on the dimension of personal health analytics, where I'd go.
Oh, that's great. So patient-generated data, making it useful and actionable by the health system, and eventually perhaps also seeing how that data can work into the performance measures. But as you said, lots of work there to do, a lot of work all around, but some great insights today on the role of the patient and how they can support care providers, maybe even reduce some of their workload as opposed to increase it. With that, Jan, any additional insights into some of the things that you're working on now? Any other books in the works?
Actually, I am just beginning a book on patient engagement from the standpoint of patients and caregivers and what they'd really like out of the system and what tools would make things work for them. But I have to also say that as a key takeaway, I think we are at a true crossroads where there is a lot of hope and a lot of potential for transformation to be real and sustained. And it really is all about including the patient at the center and bringing them into partnership with both our financing of care and our delivery of care.
Well, that's a great point to end with, great optimism, a great time of opportunity. And so, Jan Oldenburg, so great to talk with you again. Keep up the great work and keep the fires burning on patient empowerment. And we really very much appreciate you joining us here on the program today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And that'll have to be the last word today. You've been listening to This Week in Health Innovation. We've been chatting with Jan Oldenburg, a senior manager at Ernst & Young's Advisory Healthcare Practice. and I want to congratulate my colleague for a yeoman's job at interviewing today. We do this weekly on This Week in Health Innovation. Join us next week, Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, for another episode. Greg Masters for Phil Marshall saying bye now.